Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Good morning, everyone. It's January 1st, 2024. I can't believe we're here, but we are. John Bailey, a White Plains Citizenet reporter, publisher, and editor. He's on the line already. And my name is Hezzy Eris. I'm with Yonkers Tribune. And so good morning, John, and Happy New Year to you and your family.
Yes, Happy New Year. Great to be back on the 2024 version of Westchester on the Level.
Yeah, I wonder, do you think that we're going to morph into something different than we've been before? I mean, is there something new that we've learned in 2023 that we need to incorporate into 2024? Or are we just gliding on a good, good road?
We have to stop. We have to stop repeating bad behavior.
Oh, that's true. I have to do that every year.
And we have to be a nice person and a nice nation.
Yeah, I wonder if we're going to become a bit more civil than we've been. We've been really tough on each other nationally. And internationally as well. That's very astute of you, but it just is a reality. I don't know, we've become, just uncomfortable with people. I don't know where that came from. We used to be a little bit more together. It seemed like a neighborhood at one time.
We're afraid.
That was so disparate.
We're afraid of what if we say something the other person doesn't like, you'll get into an argument.
That's very true. Worse than that, some people not only get into arguments, people getting killed and shot and stabbed because they don't look right or something turns somebody else off. Too many people are walking around with ammunition of some sort, knives, bullets, guns, who knows what. And people are hitting other people on the street. They're walking innocuous, doing nothing, just walking on the street, and people are getting knocked. Unbelievable. I don't know where this came from or what instigated all of this.
It was, remember that Florida shooting?
Was it Trump?
the Florida shooting whereby somebody was walking around with a gun and he just felt somebody was suspicious and was threatening him, so he shot him. It was the beginning of the stand your ground fence.
Yes, that's true. That's true.
That's how it all started. Yeah, it made it legal to just blast somebody if you felt threatened. Shoot first and ask questions later and say you're sorry later and I didn't mean it. And I'm sorry, but you did mean it.
Yeah, absolutely. So you think we're going to be able to evolve into something different? Where did we get the temerity to do that, to literally shoot people? Because there's so many people being killed and stabbed, shot, slugged, I don't get it. People, women are being raped on the subways, on the subway train. I mean, it is insanity.
Seems to be this backlash against women in general by men.
Are men feeling insecure to such an extent that they have to hurt women? I mean, really?
Well, they are angry that women, A, may act more intelligent, may be more competent. They feel they themselves are, and they feel women are taking their place, and they start resenting. So it is easier for them to assault a perfect stranger. That isn't always who's being assaulted. What I'm seeing a lot of is these family killings whereby husband and wife have a dispute. They've been fighting a long time. Now, remember, they used to love each other. So therefore, how can you, if you once loved somebody, just kill them? And the children, what is the deranged mind that makes it okay to do that? And then they kill themselves. So this is indicates to me a lot of low self-esteem, a failure of relationship building over the course of time, and an inability to deal with the pressures of, say, children. That children get in the way of a relationship, and we know that. I have had children, and you dedicate yourself to the children, and that sometimes really kills the intimacy of a relationship, and it is just something that aggravates all the time. I have to pick up the kids at school.
I think
anybody out there with a family knows this.
Oh, absolutely. And so think that if we feel insecure before the women that we love, or we feel that they're ahead of us, why don't we respect that? Or in case we're uncomfortable about it, why don't we go and study more? Or is it just an impossibility after a certain point in life?
It's very hard to confront woman with things she does that annoy you, because she feels she's completely justified in pointing out what's wrong with you.
Well, they are
completely
justified in telling us what's wrong with us, but they don't always take the medicine when it goes the other way. I don't know why.
Yes. On the other
hand, maybe because they feel that they're right. So who knows? Maybe they are. Maybe they're not.
Well, this is exactly the root of the national problem. You've got people who feel they are right, and you got people that feel they are right, too. And so, therefore, you can't come to a meeting of the minds because you are stymied by your stubbornness.
Well, you know, it's one thing
stubbornness
to be stubborn
is
in
cause
a relationship.
Of a lot of problems.
Yeah, absolutely, because of a lot of it's probably monetary or with the kids and stuff like that. But you would think that we would be a bit more civil since we love our partners. But we did at one time, so what made us lose our love? That's what I don't get. I mean, you may not love them at a particular moment, but at least you respect them. You wouldn't hurt them. That's what I don't get. The violence is what really offends me tremendously.
The violence is caused by the fact that you have a weapon in hand in your house.
Mm-hmm.
You have the means by which to immediately put yourself out of the misery that this other person is causing you, and these kids that you were once really proud to have as a father. Now, wives do this too. Suddenly you resent. However, the persons usually being killed are the wives or the girlfriends.
Yeah. Oh, but that's probably because of the physical prowess of the male in most cases, you would think.
Could be, and also the inability of the woman to commit violence herself against the partner, because it's not that a part of her. Men have temper.
Incendiary, right? Exactly.
Yes, and we flare up, and we generally have this aggressiveness, and very hard to suppress that, particularly when you have spent a lifetime not attempting to suppress it. I was sitting down with my son yesterday when we were driving around Peekskill, and usually do monologues with him. And I started drawing up a list of resolutions for myself and my son, you know, based on both of our problems. And
right.
End of about 30 minutes of talking about it, I realized that he had less faults than I did.
Uh-huh.
And that was very well, instructive.
That is instructive.
And I mean, I
so
really have a lot to work
pretty
on.
Well. Yeah.
Really.
No, I mean,
and this is what
you know,
people
it,
should
it does
do.
It takes an education. It takes an education. You have to know yourself in order to give your children, bequeath them your knowledge and hopefully teach them the right ways. But it's not so easy. It may be easier said than done, but most people don't know how to do that. I don't think we know how to inculcate what we know and to bequeath it to our children at times. I think women are better
Netflix.
At that somehow.
Netflix and television
mm-hmm.
and movies are a great way to ignore personal issues.
That's very true. That's very true.
You can't sit down and perhaps you get into an argument or you discuss politics. That's one thing mm-hmm. I recommend couples should never do is discuss politics, particularly today. It's a source of discord. The woman is usually conciliatory, says you don't really know the issues here, and I think
mm-hmm.
you're and don't like that. Fall into
yeah.
the I'm right syndrome.
Uh-huh.
And,
well,
and
know,
this
maybe,
causes
maybe
a
we,
lot of
maybe
arguments.
Men and women, maybe men and women haven't realized the boundary lines. Even though you'd think that we would by this time in our existence of humankind, you would think that we would know better how to contend with one another. And yet we don't.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know where the violence comes from, verbal violence or physical violence. I don't know where that comes from. And is that insecurity in the male more than it is the women? I don't think women usually...
Is rage that he doesn't
it's
get
rage.
His way. It is rage
yeah.
that he feels he is the victim.
Mm. So are males more insecure than women?
The victim syndrome.
So do you think men are more insecure?
Women feel it is their... I'm just generalizing here, but I mean...
I understand.
If and usually would get out of a relationship if they were being abused, but many don't. And that's a good question to ask the people who are supposed experts in human behavior. They're not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very true.
Just as much as problems as we do. And
Yeah, exactly.
I think psychiatry has failed the nation.
Yeah, we don't get we don't
it's always
get
been excuse.
Practice. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, we
you
should get
be...
examples of best practice, and we don't have that. I wonder though if the
right.
underlying factor with all of the discord becomes it somehow is infringed upon by money. Is money the biggest issue? Are they very well to do? Do they have the same problems as people of simpler means, or does that not matter?
Well, I think you can make a case that the richer you are, the more egotistical you are, that thoughts
uh-huh.
are correct.
Yeah, that's quite
you,
a
you know someone
that, so.
Very intimately
yeah.
who is like that, running for president.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, gosh.
In fact, I think the media is doing a terrible job of promoting Trump for president by unending coverage, whatever Trump
mm-hmm.
does and says, no matter how vile, gets up there and is dissected. Nobody asks him, well, on day one, what strict restrictions would you make on the way the media covers the presidency? I'd ask him that question, and he debated.
Yeah.
And then another reporter might ask him, well, how would you address the deficit and the problems caused if you cut to the poor. How are you going to handle the human crisis this could cause? No one ever asks a policy question in these debates, and it is a disgrace. I mean, they don't
really
know the meaning of a tough question. They ask a general question. What you really expose political people is ask a specific question, a specific matter,
be,
and they will
it
dodge
be,
it.
Yeah, well, it seems to be more of a show for the pundits on television and radio, and they don't ask the right questions. And I don't understand why. And I don't know, when I come to think of it, even though I think it would be appropriate for Trump to be on stage with the other Republican candidates, but he doesn't want to validate the others. And so I think that's part of the problem, too, the standards that we are no longer being abided by. And I don't –
Journalism schools have failed us.
Yeah, they have.
It used to be – it was who, what, when, where, how, and why.
Yep, exactly.
Never see all that in an article today. You have the reporter's opinion as to why, but that isn't really a valid opinion.
Well, I think that people no longer recognize the difference between fact and opinion, and they've morphed into one too often. And,
they do.
That's absurdity. Terrible. Yeah. And I see that in the Wall Street Journal. I see it in the New York Times. And other publications as well. The British press is not...
Wall Street Journal has always, even when Dow Jones owned it, been a pro-business paper. Business could do no wrong in the Wall Street Journal. They rarely reported on corruption, and they supported it all the way. And they have not changed. It's just now it's a very important thing. They do. Still don't.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. The reason for inflation is because businesses are laying off people and they're raising prices to make their profit. No one is actually saying that. Not Paul Krugman, not all these wonderful economists. And my way of thinking, the economists are tools of business. I think government statistics
are
manipulated. Yeah, they're absolutely manipulated. And, hey, how about asking some tough questions of Mr. Biden once in a while? How do you see a way out of this? How can you have any influence on what they do over there?
Mm. Yeah, exactly.
You got two mad dogs going at it each over there, and the death toll is about 200 a day. And what was really interesting, that they've 68 journalists have been killed over there.
Yeah.
2 months. 68 journalists, and that's deliberately.
Oh,
a guy
know.
With a camera is not going to kill you, but you kill him anyway.
It wasn't like this 20 years ago.
One
was it, John? I don't remember it like this. I think, I don't know, we've lost our way. I have a great feeling, even though I'm sure a lot of people will get bent out of shape just mentioning Donald Trump. He created and redirected the demeanor of the nation in such a way that I think it really caused us pain. And I don't know if we realize it yet, but I think a lot of people do. He's really caused a schism in our nation, and I don't see him wanting to bring it together.
Well, there was a very good article that was quite revealing by a woman that handles Trump's polling. And she made the point that Trump is running on the fact that he can calm down the nation and bring it together and calm their anxieties. This is a big selling point. It's insidiously clever. And this is what people are buying into. how he has the credibility he has is a mystery to me. That is why specific questions has to be asked of him next 12 months, 10 months for the election.
Absolutely, but I don't see the landscape. I don't either. I think that a lot of reporters are just afraid to ask those questions, and I don't know why.
Well, they are targets.
Maybe the networks that they work for are not going to permit it.
Well, the targets, networks are really vulnerable because they can have licenses revoked, individual stations can be revoked. I mean, there are so many things the president could do. He could establish internet fees are beyond the reach of, say, a website like yours or a website like mine.
Yeah, absolutely.
He could do that. I mean, I'm not going to pay $1,000 a year to run this website.
No.
And it could be a lot higher. I mean, that's the way he limits media.
$1,000. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, right. It would be a lot more. Just threw that out. It would be a small fee at first to regulate the media and bring order to the media. And who is the biggest establishment of disorder on media? Websites.
Yeah. Well, because
owns them all, but they all support him.
Yeah. Well, they
already has.
There's so much. Well, the energy on the internet has been the websites, rather than the news media in particular. Somehow or another, the press has not been able to inculcate a greater interest in what they write.
No.
Maybe they're too stodgy or something. They just haven't caught up with the times. The language is sometimes poor as well.
The dismemberment of Khashoggi sent chills in the journalists worldwide. If a leader of a major world economy player, Saudi Arabia, can order killing of a journalist.
The murder.
Means you would think nothing of killing innocent citizens either.
Yeah, absolutely.
He was
a powerful man, Khashoggi.
We continue to make policy with him. I really draw the line with Biden on that. You cannot associate with the Ripper of Riyadh.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what it was.
The problem, you know, how come we have a sense of decorum, of civility? And yet so many people on the international stage, not that they're better than us, but they have power and prowess and education as well. And you wonder why they do what they do, which is just not, you know, the standard rules of engagement.
Right now, the leaders of Hamas are living in luxury, drinking Western booze, enjoying the favors of the most beautiful women on the planet.
Yep.
The towers down in Qatar.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's unbelievable that they are being allowed to live.
Yep. Well, that's
should
also...
Should be dead by now. Should be dead
well,
by
you know,
now. They caused all this.
That's where the reporting stinks. Because quite often they don't deal with it. I think it's like they...
How about interviewing these?
Yeah, they don't. They don't. They don't ask the.
Well, maybe the interviews are refused on a few. But I mean, my feeling is, Qatar, by harboring them, is an ally of Hamas. They are.
Yeah, exactly. But you know,
you don't see them sitting in the tunnel. He's Gaza.
No.
And that is the problem. How come these guys are being allowed to live, let alone be considered serious negotiators?
I don't get it myself. I just don't get it.
This whole thing is now blamed by Israel overreacting. Okay?
Yeah.
Well, they didn't overreact. I mean, we took two wars over 9/11.
Yeah.
Lost 100,000 Americans in them. But we did. And now Israel is not allowed to retaliate in one of the massacres I can ever remember.
Well, I think that's the thing that's so problematic, that all of a sudden it seems that even though Israel didn't start this issue, and there could have been other avenues to negotiate something different if they felt put upon for so many years. But whatever the case is, it could have been an open forum on the international stage. Instead, we don't have that discourse. And it's all of a sudden Hamas is correct what they're doing. And Israel is the bad one, as if they're the ones that created this. And the rhetoric is such
that is a false narrative.
Israel. It is.
False narrative. I do not know of what I speak on this issue, but when Israel established settlements in Gaza, was that not unoccupied land?
No, it wasn't.
Just
it
don't
wasn't,
know.
It wasn't. It was. It wasn't. It wasn't Gazan land. You know, the place where they had the initial killing was in, they had a rave, and they were the first people to get killed, and that was a legitimate place.
Entertainment venue. Where do these guys attack a Taylor Swift concert?
Can you imagine? It's not that far removed.
Oh, I mean, I can see that happening.
Yeah. People
forbid I give them ideas,
and I'm sure they've had those ideas already. But people take up arms, and there doesn't seem to be any mechanism to diffuse all this animosity. And the people who engage in fighting and killing don't express what their real issues are. So nobody sits down and has a gentlemanly or womanly discussion to resolve these issues. I don't know why it gets to be so incendiary. And people take other people's lives, you know, for granted. People get blown away for what reason? Just because they're walking and alive? It's insane. It's insane.
They don't
and
look
it's all
right.
Over the world.
Don't look
it
right.
It doesn't. Yeah. And you know what the real,
there is
the
much
real
less...
crazy thing is? Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
I'd like to say that I have been around the country a lot the last 7 or 8 years with my daughter and her sports teams. And I was never treated badly because of the way I looked or because I was from New York. And I think the hatred overplayed.
Yeah.
Everybody in the middleweight West hates us. No, but not everybody in the South hates us. They like our money when we go down there. And half of the people down there are from New York anyway.
Yeah.
Which makes me wonder why they elected DeSantis. But, I mean, there's no explanation.
No.
And, I mean, if people say the right things that favor prejudices, so they get elected. What Trump has done for what since 2016?
Yeah,
just
I find him divisive though. That's the thing. He may have some policies that may be appropriate, but overall, he just doesn't know how to manage in a constructive manner something that's respectful of all of society. And he just doesn't come off.
It always
to me
has to be his way. So, I mean, He doesn't listen to advice, and he does what he wants so that he can.
Yeah.
Man, he's insecure.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, listen, John, always an exhilarating discussion with you. What a pleasure. Again, Happy New Year to you and your wife and your children.
New 2024, and, John Bailey.
Absolutely. All the best to and the White Plains Citizen at reporter@WPCNR.com. The publisher and editor, John Bailey. Thanks a million, John.
So long, everybody, and as Dan Rather said, have courage.
Exactly. We should all have that. Take care, John. Goodbye. All right. Let's move on to none other than Michael Edelman, who's on the line already. Bear with me a moment. Good morning, Mr. Edelman. How are you?
Good morning, Hezzy. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you and your family. That's absolutely wonderful. I'm so excited to talk to you because it's a great way to start the year on the first day of the year. I can't believe we're at 2024. I can't believe I made it this long.
Hard to believe.
Amazing. It really is. It's amazing. I'm getting on in years, so it really is. I can't even imagine the number that I'm at. Well,
join the club.
So, exactly. So tell me, what's going on with President Biden and Donald Trump? How is President Biden doing a good job in getting the word out there to his effectiveness? And why hasn't he done a better job? Because I think people are unaware of what he's accomplished with the economy and so on and so forth. Where's the disconnect there? Is it his son? Because the son shouldn't really be part of the equation anyway. And I don't know why he is.
Well, here's the thing. There are a number of things going on simultaneously. First of all, the base of the Republican Party, which predominantly watches Fox News, is getting misinformation daily about the state of the economy. Because if you look historically, Joe Biden actually has one of the best economies of any first-term president. Unemployment is at decades low. Inflation, although it was up and people were paying more at the pump, is now down to 3%, and gas prices have plummeted down. His infrastructure bill has created jobs, and in fact, under Joe Biden's leadership, 14 million jobs have been created, which is more than were created under Donald Trump. But people don't feel it. Because they had to first endure high inflation. And now that inflation is coming down, there's a lag. But by the time we're in the presidential general election, I'm betting that most people will have caught up in terms of how they view the economy.
I see.
So there isn't a lot that Biden can do other than to point to his successful presidency and keep reminding people about the numbers, because the numbers don't lie. On the other hand, at the same time, people that are watching Fox are getting hit with the worst economy, their gas prices are high, food prices are high, and Biden's doing nothing about it, which is not true, of course.
Yeah. Well, I guess, but that keeps Fox News and others like them, I guess, engaged, and they're able to hold on to their audience. Is the audience that large?
Yes. Well, it's larger than CNN, and it's larger than MSNBC. But is it large, you know, compared to everybody that watches television and on a single day? No, it's not.
No.
On the other hand, these people who are Trump supporters don't watch anything else. And so they take for granted what they're being told.
But what is it about Trump that makes him so endeared by so many people who are, supportive of him? I find his language very difficult to appreciate. is very demeaning and condescending, and he's always right, and he's not always right, and it goes on and on and on. You know, he's like a rock star somehow to the people that are supporting him. And
well,
it just doesn't make sense.
Well, you know, it doesn't make sense to the rest of us, but he is viewed as a god,
yeah,
a vessel sent from God, a Christian god, of course, to right the wrongs that the Christians have supposedly suffered at the hands of the leftists. The last teleprompter read, he was talking about getting rid of the vermin right out of the Hitler playbook. And, you know, the leftists, the communists, the socialists, the Marxists, and anybody else who wanted to impose on the United States secular values rather than religious values. And these people follow him. It's a cult following. They made a deal with the devil. The deal was to excuse his behavior in return for a conservative Supreme Court, for example.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it's amazing that is the nation predominantly ignorant of the fact that Trump seems to be mimicking Hitler's mannerisms and language and demeanor? It comes across to me really quite violent, and it amazes me that a lot of people don't get it. They don't see it. Are they ignorant of it?
Well, you know, first of all, we're 78 years after the end of World War II. Many people who are familiar with what Hitler said and did in World War II have passed away.
Absolutely.
And there are people that are not particularly, endowed with good history that are now in the political arena and supporting Donald Trump for the most part. And this has to do with their belief that only Donald Trump, as vulgar as he is, can deliver the United States as a Christian nation, a white Christian nation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's what it's all about.
I guess so. Because look, I'm 73 years old. My parents came from the Holocaust. And so I didn't grow up in Germany or in Poland or in any of those places, but I learned of that history, weaned on it, so to speak. And so I'm not alien to it, but I didn't live through it because of my age, and nor was I born in Europe because my parents left there during the Holocaust. And so I guess a lot of people in America just don't see that aspect of it. And they don't connect it somehow.
Of course they don't.
Yeah.
It's not part of their personal story, right? And their parents didn't particularly impart that historical knowledge to them. But more importantly, they believe that they are being replaced by dark-skinned people. And they're afraid of being replaced. And as a result of their fear, they're willing to support a guy who has no business near the Oval Office because he identifies with their fear. Let's kick the fascists out. Let's kick the vermin out. He is pandering to them, and he's pandering to their fear in particular.
Well, is there any way, for example, for President Biden, when he goes for re-election, to be able to ameliorate that the prowess of Trump in the election process, or is Biden too weak, and is Kamala Harris helping him or not helping him? Are they the right candidates to run against someone like Trump?
Well, I don't think they are personally. I think Biden wants a second term, I think he's going to be oblivious to the fact that he's going to be 82, you know, right after the election. Trump is no kid anyway, right? He's going to be 78.
Well, Trump's about the same age. Yeah, exactly.
Well, no, he's younger than Joe Biden, but they appear differently. Trump has a bounce to his step, and Biden looks droopy most of the time because Biden's putting in 14-hour days, and Trump is putting in, you know, television time in the morning.
Exactly. That's very true. That's very well said. And very well expressed. That's a reality. I don't know. So does, you know, you speak about like Governor Newsom, potentially really quite strong and young, well respected, but you don't think he's going to challenge like someone like Biden because Biden does.
He said he is not running this year.
Uh-huh.
I'm sure he's thinking of next time, but here's the problem, Ezzie. If Donald Trump accedes to the office again, there may not be a next time because
Trump
has indicated that he is going to be the retribution for all those people that believe they've been slighted by the elites, quote-unquote, or the globalists, quote-unquote. Of course, that's code for you know what. And that's why it's important that Donald Trump be kept away from the Oval Office. There was an interview this week by ABC's Jonathan Carl of three women, including Cassie Hutchison, who worked in the White House, steps away from Donald Trump, all of whom were Republicans, all of whom never voted for a Democrat in their lives. All three women said that Donald Trump was unfit to hold office. These are people that are living and breathing in the White House.
Yeah. Do you think that we're going to get, is that a new reality that's going to come about? Is that at the very, we're at the very beginning of that? What's changing the demeanor toward Trump? Or is that just a very small, inconsequential?
But think about it. Every single person that Trump had working for him, either in the White House or as Secretary of Defense in Mark Esper's case, they all say that he's unfit.
Yeah.
Kelly, John Kelly, Mattis, Bill Barr is Attorney General. They all said, they all agree. Are they all wrong? They can't all be wrong.
No, they can't all be wrong.
Because they observed him close up and they realized that he is unfit to be president of the United States. Period.
So I guess, so do you think that we're moving toward a direction where people will start to recognize that he's unfit, or does his demeanor in cause him to be I guess, respected somehow by the electorate? And what is it, what is it that makes people think of him in such good light? I still don't see it.
Well, they think of him in good light because they've been persuaded that he has directly been sent by God. You know, and so they're confusing... They're confusing politics with their Christianness, if that's a word.
Yeah.
Meanwhile,
I hear you.
We'll talk about the political situation. He's been taken off the ballot in two states, in Colorado and in Maine.
Yeah, that's the thing that was amazing to me. And I wonder if that's, you know, I was surprised about Maine, not for any other reason, not any particular reason, but just didn't think that they would do that, but they did. And I wonder then if this will keep on unfurling on a national stage. This is it could actually undermine him, what's going to go on from state to state. It really is amazing that about the only positive thing that I've seen on the political landscape. He was not permitted to run.
The two cases are different because in Colorado, the decision was made by a court, right?
Yes.
But in Maine,
right,
the decision was made by a Democratic Secretary of State.
Yeah.
Both decisions, the judicial and the executive decision, will be reviewed, no doubt, by the Supreme Court. So there's one rule for every state. And I suspect that the Supreme Court is not going to support the idea that the 14th Amendment paragraph 3, which says that anybody who participates in an insurrection cannot hold public office. I don't think they're going to be able to support that because there's never been a determination of what it takes to objectively conclude that somebody has been engaged in insurrection. He hasn't been charged. He hasn't been convicted of it, right?
Correct.
And so how can you say that he's guilty of it when, in fact, he hasn't ever been convicted of exactly that? If he was convicted, then I think it'd be a no-brainer to the Supreme Court. But this is going to be tougher, much tougher.
Wow. Is there anybody else on the landscape that, you know, there are people on the platform for Republican hopefuls, but is there anyone really strong enough to challenge Trump? Or is he like a demagogue and he's almost untouchable at this point?
Well, he's got huge leads.
Yeah. Huge.
In Iowa, the Iowa caucus, which is on the 15th. And then a week or 10 days later is the New Hampshire primary. The only one that has a little bit of a path toward the nomination is Nikki Haley. Christie does not. He's getting about 3% of the vote. But Haley is doing very well, particularly in the state of New Hampshire, where, unlike other states, independents are allowed to vote in the Republican primary. You don't have to be a Republican to vote in that primary. And what she's appealing to independents and moderate Republicans. And if she beats them in New Hampshire, it'll be a different story. But I really don't see that happening. Donald Trump is the leader of the party. He's like an incumbent president as far as his constituents in the party are concerned. I know he got beat in 2020, but he says that was a fraud and he really won the election, and they believe him. So he's running as if he were an incumbent.
Exactly. Wow. I would never have imagined that we would come to this point, but we certainly have. He's like a rock star, and it's amazing. It really is amazing. I find Nikki Haley very... it's compatible with my mindset to respect what she's doing and saying, but I just never thought that the Republicans would be voting for a woman of all, you know. I'm surprised she's doing so well, literally surprised. So I didn't expect that would happen. Does she have a chance? Certainly not against Trump, I don't think.
I don't think she has a chance. And frankly, I think she's angling to be on the ticket as vice president, but she won't be.
Yeah. No, I thought so too. But I don't know if she'd want to she'd feel comfortable with Trump at the lead. Well, we'll see. We'll see what happens. What else is important that's going on the national stage? Oh, one thing I always want to ask you, why is it that Trump is recognized to be younger than Biden when they're about the same age?
Because of his demeanor. His demeanor is younger. Yeah, you know, there's chronological age, and then there's the age that you appear to be. Donald Trump has a lot of energy, and he doesn't put in 12 and 14-hour days. He doesn't have the weight of the world on him, although he does have 91 felony counts pending against him, but he appears not to be particularly bothered by that. And when people see Joe Biden, it looks like he's falling asleep. Even though he's reading his teleprompter and delivering his message, it still looks like he's sleeping. It really does.
Yeah.
His eyes are closed.
It does.
You know, he slurs a little bit, his speech, and he looks like an old man. I mean, you can't get around that.
No, you can't. Yeah, that's a problem. Oh my God, it's like, you know, I guess you need the looks, you need the youth, you need all kinds of things to become credible with the public. Yeah, and Trump comes off pretty good, considering it's his demeanor, it's his attitude. I think, which is very powerful, even though I don't agree with him. Is there going to be a change? Can there be a change with Trump still in the mix, or are we going to need to go beyond the next election?
If he wins the election, you better decide what country you're going to besides the United States. Which
we certainly are.
I won't stay here if he wins.
No, neither would I. I've got my passport ready. I really do. I'm ready to go. I don't want to live in a country like this, not with him there, because it's not going to be good. So what else is more important on the landscape? Anything that we should be looking at with the Supreme Court? Or what should we be focusing on?
Well, I think we should be focusing on the Iowa caucus, frankly, because, I mean, this is the beginning of the 2024 campaign for the presidency. You are in 2024.
Yeah.
The caucus is in 10 days or 12 days.
Yeah.
Ron DeSantis has bet it all on Iowa, put millions of dollars into Iowa. If he gets beaten by Donald Trump,
finished.
He probably should drop out of the race.
Right? Yeah.
Nikki Haley, on the other hand, is betting on New Hampshire. And if she gets beat in New Hampshire, she should get out of the race, which would leave Donald Trump to the next primary state, which is Nikki Haley's home state, South Carolina. But the polling says that she's getting beat in her home state.
Uh-huh. Wonder why she doesn't hasn't done well in South Carolina since she was a governor there at one time, right?
She was, because in South Carolina, they like Donald Trump, the base of the party. They like Donald Trump.
Wow. Did we ever have a president who had such, I don't know, he's like a rock star somehow or another, a political rock star. I don't know how he was able to accomplish all of that. It's his language, it's his demeanor. I don't know. And people were enamored by his conduct as president. And yet it just didn't seem to always.
I wasn't either. I don't understand what's to be enamored about. The tax cut, first of all, his deficit was bigger than Joe Biden's. Okay.
Yeah.
He spent more money and owed more money than Joe Biden has. That's number one.
Yeah.
Number two, the tax cut that he signed gave the benefits to those in upper income, not to the middle class.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
What is it? So he moved the embassy to Jerusalem, okay? So what? I mean, that is not an accomplishment.
Not
that
real,
is just
no.
Yeah. So
yeah, it's nothing.
I don't know what his other. I don't know whether his border policy didn't work either, and he separated minors from their parents at the border. So I'm not sure why people love that, other than the fact that he said he's going to build a wall. He still says he's going to build a wall. He didn't do it the first time.
No,
that was
he didn't.
What he ran on. He went, I'm going to build a wall, and remember, and Mexico's going to pay for it.
Yeah, which never happened.
Right. Exactly.
Well, it's amazing, though, that he was able to get away with a lot of BS, and people still cling on to those concepts that he espoused but didn't come through with.
Because it's not about, it's not about policy.
It's about
the base
what,
of the Republican Party. It's about protecting their white Christian identity in a country that is rapidly becoming darker.
Yeah, exactly.
So what he promised was, I will make sure you are not replaced by the people coming in. Not necessarily in terms of jobs, but not replaced socially, on the social ladder, on the hierarchy. So these people are, some of them are dirt poor, but the only thing they had was their whiteness. So they could look down at people coming from south of the border, and they could look down at blacks in the United States because they clung to their whiteness.
Yeah. I could never see that, you know. I'm white, but I could never see, you know, denigrating others because of the color of their skin. I was never raised that way. So
you're not considered white, by the way. You're not considered white by white nationalists on the right. You're a Jew, am I. And we are not considered white by them. Only Christians considered white.
I see. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Well, so that's the danger. That's the danger of Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
To all the rest of us. And I certainly don't plan on spending the last couple of years of my life worried about whether the military is going to knock on my door.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I haven't bought my ticket, but I know where I'm going. if he comes into power, forget it.
Exactly. In the meantime, everybody has to work to make sure he doesn't.
Exactly. I think that's the whole point.
Yeah.
Well, as usual, it's been a pleasure and an honor. I want to wish you and your family. I haven't mentioned Jeffrey in a long time, so give him my best as well, and your wife.
Thank you.
And the best for a new year.
Yep.
Thank you so much.
Speak to you next week. Happy New Year. Bye-bye.
Happy New Year. All the best. Goodbye. Well, it doesn't get better than Michael Edelman. Always a pleasure, always insightful, always so clear. And I think that's absolutely brilliant. So let's see what's going on. There's so many things to be concerned about. One thing you should know, there's free Beeline bus service to and from White Plains and Yonkers for New Year's Eve ball drop. So that's important. I think hopefully you'll be able to enjoy and engage in that. That's always fun. Most lane closures have been suspended for the New Year's Eve weekend. There's free coffee and hot tea for thruway travelers. So that's important if you want to think about that. Extra New Year's Eve service on subways and commuter rails, off-peak fares in effect on commuter railroads. On Sunday, the 31st of December, Metro North will operate on a Sunday schedule. Additional service from Grand Central Terminal will operate after midnight until 5 in the morning, which is great for partygoers. And on Monday, January 1, Metro North will operate on a special schedule with hourly service through many stations. And then there's free New Year's Eve shuttle service in White Plains, Yonkers, and New Rochelle. And bear with me a second. Got to spread this out. And let me see what else we have here. Let me just see here. Okay, I think that's basically it. So let me just look and see what else there is. I think that's it there. So let me move on to the international stage and see what goes on there. Bear with me a moment here as we move on to that platform. I want to start here first. Well, very frightening, a series of quakes in the Sea of Japan has destroyed buildings and triggers of tsunami waves, not one, but many. And this is really quite interesting. Japan has begun its third release of wastewater from Fukushima a nuclear power plant. So on Thursday, Japan began releasing a third batch of treated wastewater from the stricken Fukushima nuclear plant, a process that has seen China and Russia ban seafood from the country in response. So Tokyo Electric Power said it started releasing 7,800 tons of water that had been used to cool reactors that went into meltdown after a 2011 deadly tsunami. And the release is estimated to finish in about 17 days. A Tokyo Electric Power company spokesperson said. And from late August, the utility gradually began releasing the 540 Olympic swimming pools worth of wastewater that is being stored on the campus of the Fukushima Daiichi power plant. So the facility was running out of space to build more water tanks, and TEPCO needs to clear the area for the much more hazardous task of removing radioactive fuel and rubble from three stricken reactors. So Japan argues that the wastewater being released is harmless and heavily diluted with seawater. It is also being released gradually over decades. The International Atomic Energy Agency and many leading economies have sided with Japan on its effort. But China, later joined by Russia, criticized the release and banned all Japanese seafood imports, saying that Japan was polluting the environment. Experts from the IAEA and other agencies, including those from China, have surveyed the environmental impact of the release, including by taking water and fish samples. So the Chinese ban has particularly harmed scallop fishermen in the northern Hokkaido region, some 300 miles north of the Fukushima plant, who rely on Chinese factories for shelling the mollusks. Then TEPCO and other Japanese businesses were swamped with crank calls from China after the initial release, but now the number is negligible, the TEPCO spokesperson had said. So we'll see what goes on. 1 second here. Interestingly enough, South Korea endorses the Fukushima wastewater release. China is going to ban Japanese food imports. South Korea's government on Friday formally endorsed the safety of Japanese plants to release treated wastewater from the Fukushima nuclear plant into the Pacific Ocean as it tried to calm people's fears about food contamination. So Seoul's assessment was based on a 22-month review by government-funded scientists and aligned with the International Atomic Energy Agency's views. The agency green-lit the Japanese discharge plans this week, saying the treated wastewater would meet international safety standards and pose negligible environmental and health impacts. Well, South Korea's review focused on any impact the wastewater release might have on South Korea, and the results showed that its effect on our waters would be insignificant, quote-unquote, Bang Moon-kyu, the minister of the Office for Government Policy Coordination, said during a news conference. So even before Friday's announcement, South Korean officials were actively working to reduce public unease about the wastewater release, holding daily briefings to address what they described as excessive fears, quote-unquote, and expanding radiation tests on fish imported from nearby seas. While conservative lawmakers from President Yoon Suk-yeol's ruling party have even toured a seafood market to drink the seawater fetched from fish tanks in a bizarre gesture to certify food safety, although no wastewater has been pumped from the Fukushima yet. Well, concerns do persist. Public concerns persist as retailers report an increase in sea salt sales, apparently driven by consumers looking to stock up ahead of the release. Liberal opposition lawmakers who control the majority in South Korea's parliament have vowed an all-out fight against the Japanese discharge plants and accused Yoon's government of putting the nation's health at risk by desperately trying to improve relations with Tokyo. Quote, Japan says there are no problems science-wise, but I am still a little concerned, said Yang Ok-yeol, a 56-year-old fishmonger at Seoul's No-Yang-gin seafood market, where lawmakers drank from fish tanks last week. Lim Young, a 55-year-old consumer at the market, expressed similar worries. He says, I think it's dangerous, or rather she said, about Japan's discharge plans. Even with fish caught in South Korea, I would still have doubts on whether they would be safe to eat, end quote. So during their news conference in Seoul, South Korean government officials and scientists repeatedly insisted the contamination levels of the Fukushima plant's wastewater would be within acceptable safety standards as long as the Japanese treatment systems worked as designed. Quote, we confirmed that if the water release is carried out as planned, the discharge standard and target level or rate of radiation would be consistent with international standards, said Yoo Kuk-hee, the chairperson of South Korea's Nuclear Safety and Security Commission. Well, the safety of Fukushima's wastewater has been a sensitive issue for years between the U.S. allies, who have been working in recent months to repair relations long strained over wartime historical grievances to address shared concerns like the North Korean nuclear threat and China's assertive foreign policy. Well, South Korea's assessment was partially based on observations by a team of government scientists led by Yoo, who were allowed to tour the Fukushima plant in May to review the discharge plans. Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida agreed to that visit during May 7 summit when Yoon in Seoul, in a show of his desire for improved ties. Yoo said his team focused on verifying the capacities of the plant's advanced liquid processing plant, or ALPS, or ALPS, which is designed to reduce dozens of types of radioactive isotopes in the contaminated water to safe levels. Well, China imposes a ban. In a fiery speech on Friday, Democratic Party leader Li Jae-myung, who narrowly lost to Yoon in the 2022 presidential election, attacked the credibility of the IAEA assessment and urged Yoon to call out the report as unacceptable. Li also urged Yoon's government to demand Japan to accept a joint inspection by South Korea and other nations in the Pacific over the wastewater concerns and put its release hold. A release plans on hold until there's, quote, scientific, objective, and neutral verification, end quote. Yoon's government is putting the lives and safety of the citizens on the line, Lee had said. Well, China's customs authorities on Friday said it would ban food imports from 10 Japanese prefectures over the release and require stringent radiation tests on food from the rest of the country. China Customs will maintain a high level of vigilance, the authorities said in a WeChat statement, without specifying the list of Japanese prefectures or the districts affected by the ban. A massive earthquake and tsunami in 2011 destroyed the Fukushima plant's cooling systems, causing three reactors to melt and release large amounts of radiation. Tokyo Electric Power Company Holding, which operates the facility, has been storing the ALPS-treated water in hundreds of tanks that now cover most of the plant and are nearly full. Japanese officials say the tanks must be removed to make room to build facilities for the plant's decommissioning and to minimize the risk of leaks in case of another major disaster. The tanks are expected to reach their capacity of 1.37 million tons in early 2024. Japan's first announced plans to discharge the treated water into the sea in 2018, saying that the treated water will be further diluted by seawater before being released in a carefully controlled process, will take decades to complete. So we'll have to see where all that goes. Unbelievable. Now let's look and see some other things that you may find a little frightening. Hamas is evidently hiding explosives in toy boxes. Seems that Israel says it has uncovered toy boxes filled with warheads and terrorist explosive belts adapted for kids in a Gaza kindergarten while beefing up its underground forces to take out more Hamas tunnels. Israeli soldiers found Hamas explosive belts adapted for children and toy chests hiding warheads at a Gaza kindergarten, the army said on Sunday. Well, the Israel Defense Forces said a sweep of a Hamas-operated area near schools, a mosque, and a medical facility turned up a weapons compound filled with countless explosives. In the compound, the IDF found explosive belts specifically modified for children to wear, along with dozens of mortar shells, hundreds of grenades, and several intelligence documents. The raid on the compound was carried out after Israeli troops took out seven Hamas terrorists in the building. A similar raid occurred at a Gaza school that was serving as a shelter for Palestinian refugees, the IDF, the Israel Defense Forces, had said, adding that after the refugees were evacuated, a sweep of the building turned up rows of grenades, RPG missiles, explosives, and firearm ammunition, mortars in toy boxes. The eerie discoveries were revealed the day after the IDF announced that it found another weapon cache at a kindergarten. IDF troops found toy boxes filled with dozens of mortar shells, warheads, and RPG-type anti-tank missiles in a kindergarten in Gaza, the Israeli military said in a statement. The Israeli army has long accused Hamas of harboring its members and weapons inside civilian areas in Gaza, with the small explosive belt suggesting the terrorist group was even attempting to use child fighters. The IDF did not specify the area in Gaza where raids took place as it advanced across the Palestinian enclave and increased forces underground to root out the enemy in its elaborate tunnel system. Well, the developments surfaced as gunfire broke out on Sunday near the vital Rafah crossing from Egypt into southern Gaza, creating, quote, absolute chaos, end quote, around where aid trucks had been allowed to pass, CNN reported. It was unclear who fired on the crowd. At least 14 Israeli soldiers have been killed in Gaza since Friday in one of the bloodiest 48-hour periods during the war since the war began in October 7. Well, the dead included four soldiers killed when their vehicle was hit by anti-tank missiles, according to Israeli Army Radio, with 10 others killed in separate conflicts. A total of 153 IDF soldiers have been killed since the ground incursion began in October, and Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has said that the casualties are the price being paid to eliminate Hamas once and for all. Beginning, quote, the war exacts a very heavy price from us, but we have no choice but to continue fighting, end quote, he told his war cabinet on Sunday. Quote, we are continuing with all the force until the end, until victory, until we reach all our goals. Meanwhile, negotiators were seeking another temporary pause in hostilities to help free dozens of remaining Israeli hostages being held captive in Gaza. Well, the hostage battle continues to rage. Israeli officials confirmed that Egypt, which is leading the talks along with Qatar, has submitted a proposed truce that would be or that would see hostilities hold for 2 weeks in exchange for 40 hostages, including women, minors, and elderly men, the Times of Israel reported. Israel has specified that it wants those who are dealing with illness to be prioritized in the exchange. In return, the Jewish state would free 120 Palestinians. Okay. All right, bear with me a moment here. Okay. We're going to move on to another platform. Bear with me a second here. Well, U.S. and Israel, there's evidently bashing at the Qatar-sponsored Doha Forum of the United States and Israel. Only the brave stand up to the elite's faulty reasoning. This is an opinion piece by David Keene, the Washington Times, dated Monday, December 25. The opinion piece writes that Arab and progressive activists, think tankers, and government officials gathered this month in Qatar's capital city of Doha, days after the United States used its veto in the United Nations Security Council to kill a demand for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. Well, held annually since 2003, the Doha Forum is sponsored by Qatar, the tiny but wealthy Muslim nation that prides itself on its well-intentioned but often misunderstood efforts to ameliorate the differences and disputes within the Middle East and between the Muslim world and the West. To say that the attendees this year were upset would be an understatement, as from the stage and in the halls, speakers and attendees were in almost unanimous agreement that Israel, with U.S. backing, is engaged in genocide against innocent Palestinians whose land the Jews have occupied since the West created the State of Israel. So speakers ignored the October 7 Hamas massacre of Israelis or the rapes and hostage taking that led to Israel's decision to rid itself of the Gaza-based terrorist group. To listen to the speakers, panelists, and attendees, one would have to conclude that little of note happened on October 7, and the Israelis, without provocation, launched a campaign against the innocent civilians of Gaza, killing thousands of perhaps, or perhaps tens of thousands of men, women, and children, simply striving to survive in that tortured city. Well, no one mentioned or even referred to the fact that Hamas had over the years built an intricate mile-long tunnel system under Gaza with hidden entrances, often in or near schools with hospitals from which they would fire missiles at Israel or vanish into after the sort of terror attack they launched on October 7. And since no one admitted any of these things happened, they didn't need to justify any of it. They could instead spent 2 days decrying Israel's war crimes, crimes against humanity, murder, and genocide, with speaker after speaker demanding accountability for what's going on there now and the liberation of the occupied territories. Now, many Americans were in attendance, along with 1,000 or so guests from around the world, and most of them agreed with the theme. The Chinese were there, the Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov, while confined to Moscow with COVID-19, appeared by satellite to join in the denunciation of the West. Until South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham took to the microphone, Mr. Lavrov was the only speaker to refer to and condemn Hamas for the initial attack, as he quickly shifted the blame for the whole thing to the United States. Lindsey Graham was having none of it. He defended Israel and asked why the Hamas atrocities were being ignored, why there had been no acknowledgement of Hamas's oft-stated desire to destroy Israel and kill her inhabitants, and why the sponsors of the forum had shown a video of the destruction in Gaza without acknowledging that it had been produced and provided not by independent observers or reporters, but by Hamas itself. I've attended a number of international conferences in Europe, Asia, and the Middle East over the years, and I've been forced to listen as each of the participants and speakers blamed the United States for the problems of the world. In one sense, this one was no different, although the reality of war, unleashed always and understandably, makes the atmosphere more heated. I attended my first conference in Doha 20 years ago, after the typical U.S. bashing had been managed to get the microphone to ask a question. He informed his fellow attendees that he was from Darfur and was disappointed to hear speaker after speaker suggest that if, quote, the United States would just leave and take the Jews with them, peace and prosperity would reign. But as thousands in my country and in my country are dying, I have no wonder why the only peoples trying to stop the killing and save the innocent are the United States and those Jews who are we are supposed to hate. The attendees at that conference had no answer for the man from Darfur then and had no answer for Lindsey Graham this month. So, and this was written by David Keene, who is the editor at large at the Washington Times. Okay. One second. One second here. Where am I here? All right. All right, one second here. I want you to cover this. A U.S. senator's son is facing new charges in a crash that killed a sheriff's deputy. Well, in Bismarck, North Dakota, the United States Senator Kevin Cramer's 42-year-old son is facing additional charges in connection with a pursuit and crash that killed a North Dakota sheriff's deputy this month. Ian Cramer, who is in jail, is now also accused of theft, criminal mischief, and reckless endangerment for allegedly taking a family vehicle and driving through a closed garage door of a Bismarck hospital's ambulance bay. The new charges were filed on Tuesday. He was previously charged in Mercer County with homicide, reckless endangerment, preventing arrest, and a drug possession, among other counts, connection with a December 6th pursuit and crash. A state district court judge set a $500,000 cash bond on those charges, and Cramer set for a February 7 preliminary hearing on them. Cramer's attorney did not immediately respond to a phone message seeking comment on the new charges. He has not entered any pleas yet, and charging documents say that Ian Cramer's mother was taking him to the police department to deal with a traffic citation when his actions and comments became concerning enough that she took him to an emergency room. After she left the vehicle, he got into the driver's seat and reversed the Chevrolet Tahoe through the ambulance bay's garage door at high speed, according to court documents. Authorities say he later fled from deputies, who spotted him in Hazen, about 70 miles northwest of Bismarck. Cramer hit speeds of 100 miles an hour and kept going even after a spike device flattened two tires. According to court documents, more spikes were set as well. So, my goodness, it's truly amazing. Now let's look at some other issues. Interestingly enough, Marjorie Taylor Greene has been, one second. One second here. Okay, let me just see if I could find this for you. Bear with me a moment here. One second. Some juice news just came in here. One second. Okay. There's a Kiryat Shmone. There was a massacre. There was an attack by three members of the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine General Command on civilians in Kiryat Shmona, Israel, on the 11th of April of 1974. 18 people were killed, 8 of them children, and 16 were wounded. So, and one second. So the latest is that the Palestinian insurgency in South Lebanon was a multi-sided armed conflict initiated by Palestinian militants against Israel back in 1968 and against Lebanese Christian militias in the mid-1970s. Fighting between the Palestinians and the Christian militias lasted until the Israeli invasion of Lebanon in 1982. So it continues and continues and continues, and it continues even to this day. So Lebanese find that they're incapable of expelling Palestinian fighters. So the unarmed citizenry could not expel the foreigners, while the Lebanese army was too weak militarily and politically. And so that's been the problem. A really big problem, and it continues to this day. So I don't know where that's going to go or how that's going to get resolved, but just really too much. One second. Okay. All right, I want to move on to another front. Bear with me a second here. And one second. Let's look at what's happening on evidently buying a ticket to Nicaragua. African, Asian, and Asian migrants are seeking a shortcut to the United States. So, it seems that Nicaragua has become a hotspot for migrants from around the world seeking to avoid a brutal trek through the Darien Gap jungle, including the 303 Indians whose plane was grounded last week in France on their way to the Central American nation. While migrants from South American and Caribbean countries, Africa and Asia have long had to brave the lawless, virtually impassable rainforest that straddles Panama and Colombia in a bid to reach the United States. However, analysts say that the government of Nicaragua's iron-fisted president, Daniel Ortega, a longtime nemesis of the United States, had deliberately made it easier for migrants to bypass the Darien by flying straight to his country before heading north overland. Manuel Orozco, a migrant expert at the Washington-based Inter-American Dialogue, advised Agence France-Presse that Ortega's government was facilitating, quote, the business of a network of international air services, end quote, so that migrants, quote, can reach the border with Mexico and the United States faster, end quote. Quote, we collected data for more than 500 charter flights, end quote, said Orozco, adding that between April and June, airport authorities have hired, quote, private companies located in Dubai to train officials in the international handling of paperwork for these types of flights, end quote. An Airbus A340 was detained last week at a Paris airport after an anonymous tip-off that it was carrying potential victims of human trafficking. After it was established that the passengers were traveling on their own free will, most of them were flown back to India on Monday. Indian police said that the passengers had paid tens of thousands of dollars to agents to help them reach the southern border of the United States. Premeditated. Orozco said that the Nicaraguan government which has remained mum on the matter, benefits from the costs of visas or tourist cards, depending on the nationality of the arriving passenger as well as landing. He said that Nicaragua, quote, conceived, end quote, this new air route, quote, in a premeditated manner, faced with the opportunity to worsen the migration crisis to the United States and in the process make money. Well, Liliana Bakayoko, a lawyer for the Romanian airline operating the flight, advised Agence France-Presse that Nicaragua had or approved the passenger list before the plane departed. All foreigners need to get prior approval from the immigration authorities to enter the country. From the capital of Managua, migrants travel to Honduras and Guatemala, then to Mexico, to the southern border and with the United States, paying thousands of dollars to smugglers. This allows them to avoid the Darien Gap, where, on top of the dangers of the thick jungle, rivers, and wild animals, they are preyed upon by criminal gangs and face sexual violence. Panamanian authorities say over 500,000 people have made it through the jungle in 2023, double the amount the previous year. Well, most of those braving the Darien Gap are Venezuelans fleeing economic misery, but there are also Ecuadorians, Haitians, Cubans, Chinese, Vietnamese, Afghans, and Africans from Cameroon or Burkina Faso. The International Organization for Migration, IOM, has said that, quote, most significant trend has been the shift by Cuban migrants and those coming from African nations who are increasingly choosing air routes to reach Central America, sidestepping the Darien to continue their northbound trip, end quote. Well, there is a springboard. Honduras migration statistics show a fivefold increase in arrivals from countries like Guinea, China, Senegal, India, Afghanistan, and Angola, who cross into the country from Nicaragua. Orozco said that Nicaragua has also become a springboard, quote-unquote, for Cubans and Haitians, charter flights since visa requirements for those countries were scrapped in 2021. Others take regular commercial flights to El Salvador, which in October imposed an airport transit fee of $1,130 on Africans and Indians. Most of them are, quote, destined to Nicaragua, end quote. A spokesman for El Salvador's Immigration Authority told Agence France-Presse. Well, Colombia says that the majority of passengers arriving from Turkey are Africans in transit to San Salvador, from where they head to Nicaragua and disembark. Quote, it is a population which has means to pay and intention to migrate and which pays for tickets and other things to avoid going through the Darien, end quote. Colombia's deputy foreign minister, Francisco Coy, said this week after two children from Guinea were found abandoned in a Bogota airport. Unbelievable. One second. USA Today writes in an article written by Kim Hjelmgaard, quote, we know they were raped in Hamas captivity, chilling details of what hostages faced. Handcuffed and dazed, she struggles to exit the trunk of the Jeep. She's barefoot and limping. She's bleeding near her temple. Her ankle is cut. Her gray sweatpants are bloodied. At gunpoint, she is dragged by her long, broke brown hair into the vehicle. A crowd looks on. The car speeds off. That is the last time captured in a video taken on October 7th that Na'ama Levy, 19, was seen alive. She's among 17 female hostages, ages 18 to 26, still held by Hamas somewhere in Gaza. Their families fear the worst. Quote, time is running out for Na'ama, end quote, said Levy's mother, Ayelet Levy Shachar. Quote, time is running out for the vulnerable young women being held hostages at the hands of those who torture and abuse them, end quote. Shachar was referring to the mounting evidence of rape, sexual violence, and mutilation of women and men during the Hamas attacks, Israel, on October 7, women were raped and mutilated that way, and men had their penises cut. But sexual assault appears not to have been confined to October 7. Two Israeli doctors who have been treating released hostages and an Israeli military official familiar with the matter confirmed to USA Today that some released hostages revealed they suffered violent sexual assault in captivity. All three spoke on the condition of anonymity. One of the doctors assessed that, quote, many, end quote, of the released Israeli female hostages, ages 12 to 48, there are about 30 of them, were sexually assaulted while held by Hamas in Gaza. The doctor did not want to elaborate on the specific nature of the assaults out of concern for survivors. The doctor said that people who have been sexually abused typically have a mortality rate four times higher than someone who has been sexually abused. Harris presses Israel on Gaza deaths. What does the international law say? Well, the second doctor said that many of the freed hostages exhibited signs of post-traumatic stress disorder and, quote, came to us as patients with the trauma of those who witnessed very severe sexual assault, end quote. The first doctor said that all of the freed hostages of reproductive age had been given pregnancy tests and screened for sexually transmitted infections. The Hostages and Missing Persons Families Forum, a group that represents the families of those held by Hamas, recently released a selection of anonymous quotes, it said, were from a meeting between some of the released hostages and their families with Israel's war cabinet. Quote, first of all, they touch our girls, end quote, one freed hostage said at the meeting. My mother almost fainted here during the cabinet meeting, quote, unquote, because she knows what's going on there. She saw what was done to men, said the daughter of another freed hostage. The Israeli military official said that just as authorities know that many women were sexually assaulted during the Supernova music festival and at their homes on October 7, quote, we know they were raped in Hamas captivity as well, end quote. Why were the Hamas attacks so brutal? Were the killers high on the drug Captagon? Well, the official said that, quote, we know, end quote, the remaining female hostages are being kept in, quote, very bad mental and physical conditions, end quote. The official said that the hostages are being beaten, don't have access to enough food, water, and medicine, and are held in southern Gaza, where they are transferred from house to house, sometimes over the ground and sometimes through tunnels to avoid detection. The official said some of the information comes from testimony from the released hostages and other parts of it from Israel's intelligence gathering network, while the official would not comment, which the official would not comment upon. Well, President Joe Biden, who has tried to balance support for Israel's retaliation against Hamas with concern for Palestinian civilians, has forcefully denounced Hamas's reported use of sexual violence against Israeli women and girls. He has called it, quote, appalling and unforgivable, end quote. We know they were raped in Hamas captivity. An Israeli military official who spoke on the condition of anonymity had said, quote, we all have to condemn such brutality without equivocation, without exception, Biden said at a Hanukkah holiday reception at the White House this month, end quote. Well, 33 American senators wrote a letter in mid-December to United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres, urging the international body to launch an immediate independent investigation into Hamas's use of sexual assault on October 7. Volker Turk, the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights, has claimed that Israel has blocked his team's investigators. So five volunteers and first responders who collected and helped identify the bodies of those killed on October 7 said they observed multiple signs of obvious and incontestable sexual assault. Those included women naked from the waist down with their legs splayed or underwear, USA Today told, or was shown photographs, and video that appeared to corroborate those assertions, and which have been backed up by forensic pathologists. Quote, we went from house to house and never knew what we're going to find, end quote, said Nachman Dickstein, a volunteer for ZAKA, Z-A-K-A, a search and rescue group that works closely with Israel's military and government. Israeli medical professionals and morgue workers said that many women who died on October 7 were found with broken legs and pelvic bones. They said the severity of the mutilations that they examined was such that it was not always possible to distinguish female from male victims. At least one survivor of the attack, who was at a supernova at the Supernova Music Festival, has told Israeli police she witnessed a gang rape. Despite the evidence, Hamas has denied accusations of used sexual violence on October 7. It has claimed the allegations are part of an attempt by Israel to distract from its mass killings of civilians in Gaza. International human rights groups waited 2 months before finally condemning the sexual violence. The evidence of sexual violence on October 7 is, quote, overwhelming and irrefutable, end quote, said Carly Pildis, director of community engagement at the Anti-Defamation League, an advocacy group that works to fight anti-Semitism and extremism. Well, the voices of so many of these women and girls were stolen by Hamas, but their bodies tell the truth, Pildis had said. Broken pelvises, mutilated genitals, brutalized bodies. Then we have eyewitnesses coming forward with stories of gang rape, of torture, of murder. Anti-Jewish bias makes it easier for some people to refuse to believe these accounts, Pildis had said. Quote, we are living in this believe all women era, and somehow that philosophy vanished very quickly when we're talking about Israeli women, she said. It's really hard not to see that an ingrained anti-Semitism, ingrained bias that leads people not to want to believe these voices. Still, one of the doctors treating the freed hostages said, establishing whether sexual assault has taken place is not a straightforward exercise. For a start, physical evidence in the form of bodily fluids, cuts, and bruises can disappear quickly, and verbal testimony from victims can take months, years, even decades to materialize. Quote, the first few days after the hostages were released, they mostly talked about how they lacked adequate food. Then they started to talk about how kids were separated and left in isolated rooms on their own. Then they talked about the aggressiveness of Hamas and how some of the sick and elderly were refused their medications. Finally, it was physical violence. It was step by step, which is usually how sexual violence testimony goes, end quote. Doctor said it took decades in Israel before soldiers who were abducted and sexually assaulted during the 1973 Yom Kippur War between Israel and a coalition of Arab countries led by Egypt and Syria started talking about their experiences. It's not uncommon for sexual assault victims to go for significant periods without remembering what happened to them, only to recall details later, said Jim Hopper, a U.S.-based clinical psychologist and nationally recognized expert on psychological trauma. Sexual assault is so horrific that some victims basically check out while it is happening, he said. Some may feel as if they're floating on the ceiling or that they're dreaming or in a movie and thus may not have a conscious awareness of what is actually happening to them, Hopper had said. Later they may encounter something, a particular place, person, or event, for example, that acts as a trigger and allows them to recall specific information that has been stored away in their brain about the assault, Hopper had said. Defense attorneys will often point to a victim's delayed memory recall or inconsistencies in those recollections to try to cast doubt on the victim's credibility. But research suggests that as few as 5% of reports of sexual assault are false. As few as 5%, Hopper said. And Chen Goldstein-Almog, a freed hostage who was held by Hamas in Gaza, told the Israeli broadcaster Kan, K-A-N, that three women held hostage with her, told their stories of being sexually abused by their captors. Goldstein Almog, who's 48, did not indicate whether she herself was sexually assaulted. One of the doctors treating freed hostages said one of the clearest pieces of evidence for how the hostages who remain in captivity may be being treated by Hamas is Levy, the bloodied 19-year-old woman who was caught on video being bundled into the back of a Jeep at gunpoint. Shahal, her mother, said she struggles to watch the video of her daughter, whom she has described as a, quote, joyful, end quote, sweet-natured young woman who likes to dance with her friends, enjoys athletics, and dreams of a career in diplomacy. Each moment is the most incredibly, or rather indescribably, gripping pain Shahar has ever felt. Her heart is shattered. Her nights are haunted by the absence. Contributing to this article was Michael Collins and Maureen Gropey. Illustrations were by Veronica Bravo. And it's noted in the article that if you're a survivor of sexual assault, RAINN offers support through the National Sexual Assault Hotline, which is at 800-656-HOPE and online at www.online.rainn.org. Unbelievable. It is amazing what people can do. Just the act of sexual violence is unbelievable. I can't imagine where that anger and I don't know where that comes from, you know, how to malign a conduct to make love and turn it into a violent act. I don't know where that comes from. It's absolutely amazing. And this is very interesting. Alec Baldwin has been escorted off by police after a confrontation with a pro-Palestinian protesters. Let me see if I can get this for you. Bear with me a moment. One second. Article up for some reason. So bear with me a second here. And all right, one more second here. Let me see if I can get this in place. Yeah, this is what I was looking for. From USA Today, by a reporter, Naledi Ushe, writes that Celine Dion has lost control over her muscles amid stiff person syndrome, her sister has said. Celine Dion has reportedly lost control of some of her mobility amid her stiff person syndrome diagnosis. Quote, she doesn't have control over her muscles, end quote. My heart will go on, end quote, singer's sister Claudette Dion told Seven Days on December 12th, according to a translation from French. Quote, what pains me is that she has always been disciplined. She always worked hard, end quote. Claudette Dion added that it is her dream that her sisters return to the stage one day. In what capacity, I don't know, she said. The vocal cords are muscles and the heart is also a muscle. This is what gets me, she said. Well, the Grammy-winning singer said in December of 2022 that she had been diagnosed with a neurological disorder called stiff person syndrome in an emotional Instagram video. The singer said that the symptoms are what had been causing her to have severe muscle spasms, and the spasms affect every aspect of my daily life, sometimes causing difficulties when I walk and not allowing me to use my vocal cords to sing the way I'm used to, Dion Simon, as Celine Dion had said. I have to admit, it's been a struggle. All I know is singing. It's what I've done all my life. Dion's diagnosis caused the singer to reschedule and cancel her entire 2023 tour. Stiff person syndrome, or SPS, is a disease that causes, quote, progressive muscle stiffness and painful spasms, end quote, that are triggered by environmental factors such as sudden movement, cold temperature, or unexpected loud noises, according to Johns Hopkins Medicine. Prominent SPS symptoms include muscle stiffening and painful muscle spasms that can be provoked by emotional stress or, again, outside stimuli. And these spasms can be, quote, so severe that they cause a person to fall down, Gail Medicine had said. Well, the medicine, the disease is considered to be rare and only affects approximately 1 in 1 million people. Celine Dion seeks hockey players in a rare appearance since stiff person syndrome diagnosis. Speaking about the rarity of the disease, Claudette Dion said, quote, there are some people who have lost hope because it is a disease that is not known. If you only knew how many calls are received at the foundation to hear from Celine, end quote. People tell us that they love her and pray for her. She received so many messages, gifts, blessed crucifixes, she added, and so it goes. And this article was with contributions from Elise Briscoe, Wyatt Grantham Phillips as well. Unbelievable. 1 in 1 million people. And of all people, she's been silenced because of this disease. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. It is amazing. It's a blessing to have health. It really is. Amazing. This is, let me just see here. Yeah, actor Ryan O'Neill's cause of death has been revealed. Ryan O'Neill died of congestive heart failure, according to a death certificate from the Los Angeles County Department of Public Health. The actor died on December 8th at 82 after years of health issues, including leukemia, prostate cancer, and cardiomyopathy, which affects the heart's ability to pump blood, and was listed as the underlying cause of his death, according to the records obtained by The Blast on Friday. A rep for O'Neill declined comment. He was best known for his matinee idol looks and starring roles in 1970s, Love Story opposite Ally McGraw, What's Up Doc with Barbara Streisand in 1972, and Paper Moon, the 1973 film in which he co-starred with his daughter Tatum. He got his acting start at the primetime soap Peyton Place in the 1960s. His son, sportscaster Patrick O'Neill, shared the news in a series of Instagram posts this month. So this is the toughest thing I've ever had to say, but here we go. My dad passed away peacefully today with his loving team by his side, supporting him and loving him as he would us, Patrick O'Neill wrote in the caption of a photo of a sunset. He is a Hollywood legend, full stop, he added. It's unfortunate, but we lose many, many people, including to old age as well as disease. Very, very frightening, to say the least. Wow. Anyway, so that's where we are. One second. Just see. This is something from USA Today written by Aaron Jensen. Ken Jennings reveals that Maya Malik's Jeopardy exit took him off guard. Ken Jennings revealed that my Bialik's Jeopardy exit came as a shock to the quiz show legend, now the show's sole remaining host. Jeopardy announced that Jennings and Bialik would split hosting duties in July of 2022 among ongoing Hollywood strikes. Jennings stepped in to host this season of Celebrity Jeopardy that debuted in September. The Blossom star announced in a December 15 Instagram post that she would no longer host the syndicated game show. It took me off guard because I loved working with my Mayim and I'm gonna miss her, Jennings said in a conversation with a Hollywood Reporter published on Tuesday. I can't speak to her decision-making process or her opinion about it, but on my end, I'm just a fan of Jeopardy, and I'm always delighted to host when they call upon me. I just feel extremely lucky to have been considered for this job as a non-broadcaster. So Mayim Bialik announced that she's no longer hosting Jeopardy. And so it goes. Bialik, who has a PhD in neuroscience, and Jennings, who tops the game show's leaderboard for consecutive victories and largest regular season winnings, were among the guest hosts tapped to fill in following Alex Trebek's November 2020 death. Sony Television eventually selected executive producer Mike Richards as permanent host, but he resigned less than 2 weeks later due to controversy over past remarks and unrest among the show's staff. So Bialik stepped away from the Jeopardy podium this summer in solidarity with striking Hollywood writers, according to a report from industry outlet Deadline. At the time, Jeopardy had 1 week of taping left in season 39 that was meant to be hosted by Bialik, but Jennings crossed the picket line to finish the series production before the summer hiatus, according to a person familiar with the plans who was not authorized to speak publicly. And so it goes. So that's the story. Take care and be well. Goodbye.